The House did what many said it needed to do, pass the continuing resolution to fund the government. So don't worry, that means there will be an election. But after all the saber-rattling that happened leading up to the vote, don't you wonder what was given up to convince House Speaker Pelosi to go ahead and push the spending bill forward?
Live from the cusp of midweek via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Representative Mike Conaway from Texas. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Kevin Papp and Gene Millard. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, how you doing this morning, buddy?
Super terrific. Super terrific.
Good. Uh-huh. Another beautiful day here in
gorgeous
northern Iowa. Boy, you look at the radar, there's just not much activity in the Midwest. And if you look out far western South Dakota, the Panhandle of Nebraska, there might be a few showers on the radar, but you wonder if they're really hitting the ground or not. So I can't wait for the update from Gene and Kevin about harvest progress and how they're pushing forward and what kind of results they're seeing. Because you think about it, we've got two very, very different growing seasons that we're going to be talking about. Garden spot up there in Minnesota. Some questionable conditions down in northwest Missouri. It wasn't as bad as what northwest Missouri has seen in you know what, 3 of the past 5 years, something like that. But not ideal. So we'll get an update from Gene down in Missouri about what's going on there. So
it isn't it interesting how much more hospitable a dry forecast feels in harvest season than it does in crop finishing season. We're all concerned and furrowed our brows in August. And, oh, geez, it's going to need another rain. And a lot of places didn't get it. No, what are we going to do? We got the same forecast now, baby. But for some reason, it feels a whole lot better. We're here now.
It really does. You are exactly right. Here we are stretching out summer. For us non-farmers, we're stretching out summer. That feels great. And you go back to the planting season. When they got in the field, a lot of guys didn't get out of the tractor until they were done.
It's kind
of looking like that might happen during harvest. That's crazy. Crazy. All right, buddy, let's get to it. What you got?
Well, you mentioned this in the intro. In a 359-57 vote last night in the House of Representatives, they passed the stopgap continuing resolution that, if passed through the Senate, will keep the government open through December 11. In a surprising development, House Democrats reversed on funding for the Commodity Credit Corporation, Chip, granting $21 billion in funding for the CCC, as well as $8 billion for nutrition spending. The Senate is expected to vote on it later this week. Details include restrictions on CCC funds for big oil, but Republicans blocked additional Democratic-pushed restrictions on the CCC. I'm interested to see the details on this, and you raised a great point. What was the give back to get this puppy put through?
Right.
Right.
And we will ask Congressman Conaway about that for sure. And I want to dig into this, you know, the talk that they were going to take $300 million of CCC money and give it to big oil in exchange for the SRE decision. I wonder what Congressman Conaway's take on that is too.
Yes. President Trump used a virtual speech at the United Nations General Assembly to chastise China yesterday, blaming Beijing for the coronavirus pandemic. President Trump said, quote, "In the earliest days of the virus, China locked down travel domestically while allowing flights to leave China and infect the world. The Chinese government and the World Health Organization, which he says is virtually controlled by China, falsely declare that there was no evidence of human-to-human transmission. Now, Chip, Ambassador to China Terry Branstad echoed the president's sentiments, citing China's communist system and its unwillingness to admit wrongdoing. Interesting take from Branstad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And his op-ed continues to gain, I guess it continues to get attention in trying to figure out exactly what the state is of U.S. Chinese relations. Yeah.
The Senate is looking ahead to President Trump's forthcoming Supreme Court justice nominee, which will likely be announced at the end of this week. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he believes he has the votes to confirm Trump's pick. Yesterday, Utah Senator Mitt Romney said he will vote for Trump's nominee based on what he called the, quote, immutable fairness of following the law. Other GOP senators have also expressed their support, and it is thought four Republican senators would have to break ranks to stifle confirmation. Boy, they
Yeah, and it looks like this could move quick too.
Yeah,
yeah. There's two Republican senators that will break ranks on this one, but I think McConnell, based on the conversations that I'm having, I think McConnell is right that he's got the votes.
Well, almost as important as America's presidential contest is the fight for the Senate. If Joe Biden wins the presidency, a Republican-held upper chamber of Congress could block his legislative agenda and judicial nominees. Today, The Economist launched a forecasting model of the battle for Congress, which finds that Democrats are almost sure to hold the House, but are only modestly 2 in 3 favorites to win back the Senate. So the Senate up for grabs anyway, I guess.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
Yep. Presidential candidate, former Vice President Joe Biden says he would end the, quote, artificial trade war that Donald Trump launched against the EU if he wins the presidency, according to the Democratic presidential candidate's top foreign policy advisor. Anthony Blinken said the U.S. needed to, quote, improve our economic relations with the EU given the bloc's importance as a market and because it is detrimental to fight with U.S. allies. Chip.
Yeah. I wonder what Tom Vilsack makes of the, quote, artificial trade war, unquote.
Right.
When we talk about marketing into, you know, some of those geographically named products out there that we can no longer market as, like Swiss cheese. Can't sell it. It's we'll at some point we'll have a conversation with Secretary Vilsack about that. All right, let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Hey, Chip, doing well.
Good. You got the 40 under 40 going. What's happening?
Yes. Our team at The Scoop wants to recognize younger leaders in ag retail, and we are looking for nominations of folks out there serving as trusted advisors to farmers who happen to be under the age of 40, and we will name 40 of them as The Scoop's 40 under 40. I think it's so important, as many ag retailers out there are both applying kind of the aspirational but also practical goal of being that farmer's trusted advisor. And we want to recognize those folks out there that are doing a great job.
All right. All right. What might be some of the criteria? If I was looking to nominate someone, what would I be looking for, Margie?
Yeah, we are looking for someone who you can talk about their role at their ag retailer, as well as some of their outstanding experiences in being a go-to resource for farmers. And we're asking for some community involvement as well. But I tell you what, Chip, I personally designed the nomination form, and it'll take folks about 2 minutes to fill out. I did not want it to be too cumbersome for folks to get these great folks recognized.
Exactly. Good stuff. Deadline on nominations?
Deadline's coming up. It's October 15th. So please log on to thedailyscoop.com, and you've got one click to find the nomination form.
Perfect. Thanks, Margie. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Chip.
That's Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We've got Congressman Mike Conaway up next here on AgriTalk.
Join AgriTalk next week for Dairy Week, paying tribute to America's dairy farmers and celebrating the dairy industry. Dairy Week is presented by Elanco Animal Health, with additional support from Aspen Veterinary Resources and Cargill Animal Nutrition. Register free at dairyherd.com/dairyweek.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. And joining us right now is Representative Mike Conaway from the 11th District of Texas. Welcome back to AgriTalk, Congressman. How are you today?
Doing fine, Chip. How are you guys? I appreciate you having me on, but bright blue skies here today in your nation's capital, so it's a good day.
Good deal. Good deal. Different kind of campaign season for you this year, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. I've got, I'm not raising money, and I'm not really worried about what my opponent might or might not be doing. So, yeah, it's a bit weird to have I voted in the primary in March, and my name wasn't on the ballot, and that was really odd.
It wasn't on the ballot for the first time in how many years?
16. Actually, 18, beautiful. Because I was on the ballot twice in a special and back in 2003 and 2003, so 17 years, I guess.
Well, it was certainly a nice honor that was bestowed upon you by the House Ag Committee here recently, Congressman, and well-deserved. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It was an humbling event. You're talking about the unveiling of my portrait last week. It's very humbling to have all those good folks say those things about me and know the hard work that went in on my behalf over these 16 years that helped me get to the position where I was able to be, you know, flattered and honored with a portrait. I had hundreds and hundreds of good people whose portraits really should be up there to help me get to that point. So, it was a very humbling experience.
Good for you. Good for you. I liked it. I liked it a lot. Before we get to the funding that passed the House, I know that there is an effort underway that is near and dear to your heart. Tell us about Trevor Reed.
Well, thanks, Chip. Trevor Reed is a young man, a Marine, Eagle Scout, just a good guy that got picked up for public intoxication in Moscow. He's fallen in love with a young woman lawyer in Moscow and wants to marry this young woman, and he's over there trying to learn the culture. And he got picked up, should have been released the next morning, but for the fact he was a U.S. Marine. And the intelligence team in Russia figured that out, moved the charges from public intoxication to endangering the life of a police officer. No evidence to that effect. In fact, there was laughter in the courtroom when the prosecutor tried to make that case. He was given 9 years labor in a Russian labor camp, and we think he's just being used as a political pawn by Putin because he's a U.S. Marine, and that's just unfair. So introduced a resolution last week with a bipartisan fight to demand his release, immediate release from Russia, because he's simply there now because he was a U.S. Marine, and that's he's one of us, so we need to get him back.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. Keep up the effort there, that's for sure. Okay.
Absolutely.
What did it take to get this continuing resolution passed?
An awful lot of behind-the-scenes work by some good folks. It should not have had the drama that we saw over the last 3 or 4 days, but the speaker insisted on drama, and so she got it. Last year, when they did the CR, they attempted to not replenish the CCC, which is a funding mechanism, the cash flow mechanism that USDA uses to make payments. They were going to take that hostage again this year. They failed last year. It blew up in their face. And I kind of thought that this would be a matter of course, which is normally the case. It normally just gets replenished. It's got a statutory borrowing cap of $30 billion. And that cap will be reached first couple of days of October. And in all of the Title I payments, ARC, PLC, conservation payments, marketing loan, everything gets stopped at that point in time until the appropriations process gets done. So that's not fair to producers out there who are counting on those payments to show up like clockwork because the government, U.S. government promised them. They've relied on it. Their bankers and suppliers have counted on it. And so we said, we're not going to vote for it. And she dropped the bill Monday that did not include it. I went to Rules Committee to try to get an amendment to do that. I lost that on a strict party line vote. The urban guys on the Rules Committee didn't see the value of it. And that everyone in rural America should take note that once again, the speaker has weighed in against their interest. She did it this time last year with CCC and failed. She did it in March, April on the CARES Act and trim the support that should have gone to rural America from the 50 that the Senate wanted to use down to 23.5 simply because rural America, I guess, well, you guys make your own mind up. I know what she did, but I'm not sure why she did. And now, again, wants to hurt rural America at a terrible time for the country. But also, it's worse in rural country because of the 7 years of depressed farm income has permeated throughout all of rural America. So this is another example of the heartlessness that the speaker demonstrates toward rural America. And somebody needs to ask her why.
Yeah. You know, the tag, slush fund tag that was put on the CCC funds, Congressman, and it further convinces me that CCC funding has become a bargaining chip, plain and simple.
That's exactly right, Shep. And it had not been done, no administration has taken it hostage since last year. Last year, the MFP payments came out of the CCC funding. Now, CCC funding, those dollars are prescribed by the CCC Act. The secretary does have discretion, but he's got to use it within very narrow guidelines as to what can be spent. And MFP fit within those guidelines. That made the speaker mad, made maybe Stabenow mad, and so they tried to take it hostage last year. Now, they've used additional CCC money for some of the commodities purchases and the farmers to families money, those kind of things. And I guess that made the speaker and Debbie Stabenow mad again, because Stabenow went to the floor last week and just railed about it. She thought she had some intelligence out of the White House about oil refiners or whatever, and she's the only one that mentioned it. So the rumor started with her, unless she can back it up with some sort of a source. And so they took it hostage again because they don't like rural America. And it's odd because, you know, Debbie Stabenow is chairman of the Ag Approach Committee in the Senate. You'd think she'd have some sensitivity to just how hard things are in the rural parts of this country.
Well, and the CFAP too, where the funding is coming from is coming from CCC, includes many of the issues that Stabenow over the years has demanded we address more clearly in the farm bill.
Absolutely. Yeah, the $14 billion that's being used in CFAP 2 was the $14 that was in the CARES Act, was not available to the secretary to use until July the 1st. It was always intended to be used for COVID response. And now they're arguing, well, no, he should use the $14 for next month's payments instead of for COVID. Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't brag and thump your chest that you got, and don't get me wrong, $23 billion, $23.5 is a lot of money. That's a lot of money. But it was supposed to all go to COVID response and was not supposed to be used next month to pay the bills that were already there from signups for the 2019 crop. And so, the slush fund helps them assuage their, misinformation campaign to say those kind of words, because that's not what it is. Around in 1933. The last time the cap was raised was 1987. It's been relatively a benign issue until the last couple of years.
Yeah. Congressman, can the CCC funding, can it now be used to provide some support for processors? I'm thinking most specifically about the ethanol industry.
No, the secretary believes he cannot use it. That's why you've not seen that. That's why you get the money to the corn producers there in that regard. So the argument was that Stabenow was making was that they were going to use $300 million of CCC money to pay oil refiners because of the waiver issue. Well, the only authority in the CCC related to oil is that the secretary has the authority to use $300 million worth of commodities that he purchases to trade with a foreign country to get foreign oil to go into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And that's it. And so she kind of interpreted that as them being able to use it for oil refiners, and that's silly. Now, in an abundance of caution, we agreed to put restrictions. And the secretary said he's not going to do it, but we went ahead and put restrictions in the CR that won't allow him to do something he wasn't going to do, and quite frankly, something I don't think he could do, even if he wanted to. So the issue with the ethanol guys and the CCC is that the secretary doesn't believe the parameters and the guidelines within the legislation allow him to get to that point. And that's why you saw the money going to corn producers rather than refineries.
Gotcha. Congressman, we're going to have to get you on at least one more time between now and the end of the year. Look forward to having you on again real soon, okay?
All right, Chef. I'll take you up with that, buddy. Thank you much. Appreciate it.
Sounds great. That is Congressman Mike Conaway from the 11th District of Texas. We'll be back with the Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, I'm looking at the grain complex, and there is one market that sticks out like a sore thumb, and that is soybean meal with some solid gains. What's happening there?
Yeah, really strong gains, Chip. Just really running to the upside. I think a lot of it is spreading action. Huge spreads between the meal and soy oil. So that's of note today. And then you got soybeans kind of caught in the middle, favoring the downside. So they're favoring more of the sharp price pressure in soy oil today than they are the strong gains in the meal market.
Yeah, yeah. And Argentine crush is backing off, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's a lot to do with the meal market today. You know, just like I said, the spreads are going crazy because of the Argentine situation and the way they backed off pretty significantly in their production.
Gotcha. Okay, what's happening in corn and wheat?
Well, not much to the upside, that's for sure. We don't see a lot of price pressure, down a penny or two in the corn market, and about 3 to 4 cents in the winter wheat market. But we're just not seeing buyer interest in there this morning. So that's somewhat of a concern here.
Cold storage report influencing the livestock trade today?
Well, I think so. But, the cold storage was more friendly towards pork than it was to beef. And we're seeing the cattle market trade to the upside and pork and hogs to the downside. We're seeing a little bit of early cash cattle trade come in at higher prices again this week. And I think that's influencing the cattle futures. On the hog side of things, they've tried to move to the downside a little bit, haven't found a whole lot of seller interest, and now we're moving back to kind of a mixed trade with the front end of the market firmer.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
I feel like we got a little bit of a look behind the curtain on what it took to get the continuing resolution passed there from Congressman Conaway.
Really good.
Yes. to get that insight into what is happening in D.C. Hey, before we get to the Farmer Forum, when Marky was talking about the 40 under 40, Davis, it reminded me, it almost sounded like they're looking for beacons of hope in some way, somehow.
Funny you should mention that, Chip.
Yeah.
Let me just mention this. I'll mention it quick, sure, since you so subtly are asking for it. 2020 AFA Leaders Conference coming up on November 14. Accepting nominations for Beacons of Hope until September 30 at agfuture.org/hope. agfuture.org/hope. Somebody in your community who has given of themselves to help everyone. Maybe they came up with a great idea. Maybe they helped someone who was in need, in dire straits. And we just want to recognize some of those folks who have helped out their communities and sent those positive, rippling vibes outward from themselves. AFA Leaders Conference coming up November 14. Nominations due September 30. agfuture.org/hope.
Beautiful. Thanks, buddy. Just a reminder to everybody that the Farmer Forum is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. You can learn all about ACAM by going to www.agweb.com/ACAM. Let's get this thing started. We got Kevin Papp, president of Minnesota Farm Bureau, farmer up in Minnesota. How are you, Kevin?
Very good. How are you, Chip?
Doing dandy. It's good to have you back on here, man. Everything okay?
Everything's great. The sun's shining, the wind's blowing. I'm standing in my son's yard looking at a combine with the bean head on and be rolling in the field in a day or two, I believe.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, we're going to get more on what Kevin's looking at for crops up there in just a bit. We've also got Gene Miller down in Missouri. Gene, it is so good to talk with you again. How are you?
Well, terrific, Chip. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, man, it is good to hear from you. So Kevin's waiting to get that combine rolling. Sounds like you've already got it rolling, huh?
Yeah, we've been in the corn for about the last week or 10 days. And, rolled right along, really. The moisture started to come down finally after lots of sunshine and wind there for a couple of days. But early maturities got down to about 18% moisture, and that's you know, makes for fairly quick drying system. But we kind of run out of that early maturity and getting over into some longer season. Very, very good yields, but moisture still run around 20. And so we kind of got to put a pause button on things right now as we look forward to probably getting started in beans next week.
Gotcha, gotcha. So, Gene, tell me, you said pretty good yields. That crop must have put on some awfully good yield before it. Didn't you turn a little dry late in the season?
We turned extremely dry in August. July, though, Chip, was just exactly a flip from normal here. Normally, we're lucky we get a 4th of July rain and then hold till August. Well, this time it rained about every week in July, sometime, half inch, three quarter, you know, just enough to kind of keep you going. And then all of a sudden August came along and we thought we needed more rain to finish up the bean crop, and the rain decided just to postpone itself. So it was very uneven weather-wise this year. I look at my weather records, and we entered August 2 inches above average for the year, and we are currently an inch short of average.
Okay, so, yeah, so you have been dry since those July rains,
yep,
no doubt.
Yep.
No doubt. Kevin, what's your situation up there?
Well, we've had plenty of moisture. We're above average, but also not been too much at one time. So we're really in a fortunate area, no drowned out spots, things like that. Crop looks really good. You know, in fact, it looked well enough. A lot of fungicide got put on the beans. We want to do the best we can with the bean crop, and that's just kept them a little greener, a little longer.
Yep.
But a few combines here and there, but I think after a day or two of this weather, we'll see more activity.
You know, Kevin, usually the end of the growing season for the soybean crop in your area is brought on by all of a sudden the white mold shows up. All of a sudden, some sort of a disease will show up and end the growing season on that Minnesota bean crop. But it sounds like it escaped this year without much damage.
Yeah, we did. There's pockets where you've got both of those, but we've not had a killing frost, and that crop looks really good.
Good, good, good. How about corn? Everything okay there?
Corn looks good. A little bit of corn coming out. Of course, silage is done in most areas, and guys that need corn for the livestock have started in a little bit.
Okay. All right. So, Kevin, I'll bet this week has been kind of trying for you as you heard the CCC funds labeled a slush fund. When they use comments like that, it just shows their ignorance in what that program, what the CCC is, and what it means for farmers.
I don't think we have to tell anybody on this program that certainly we have a disconnect from agriculture by a lot of folks, and it's getting to be more than a generation or two. And we really need to continue to engage with all consumers, whether they're elected officials or anybody else, about what agriculture is and who those families are. But it's been a long week. We were very fortunate to spend about 40 minutes yesterday with Ag Committee Chairman Peterson and talk about the issues and behind the scenes, and really appreciate everybody on both sides of the aisle in agriculture going to bat for farmers and getting this taken care of and passed on a bipartisan method.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I want to come back to that here in a moment, Kevin. But, Gene, Kevin mentioned the disconnect that we've got from urban to rural lawmakers right now. And in some cases, you look at the rural lawmakers, and they've got a disconnect from agriculture. Have you ever seen it like this, Gene?
Well, not to this extent, Chip.
Yeah.
You know, in Kansas is a classic example, because we've had Pat Roberts, as a longtime senator there, retiring. And it's a dogfight going on over there right now between the agricultural community and the suburbans in terms of who's going to fulfill that seat. And that could tip a little balance in the Senate. So in Missouri, thank goodness, we're pretty well fixed. Our Senate races are not up this year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and here in the state of Iowa, you look at the fight between Ernst and Greenfield for the
for
a Republican Senate, a seat that is currently held by Ernst, a Republican. Kevin, Gene's saying that there is some of the balance at risk in this election is awfully accurate, isn't it?
It's very accurate, and we've got a lot of races in Minnesota that are going to be close, including Congressman Peterson as Ag Committee Chair. And we certainly need to make sure we've got that representation, that understanding of agriculture at the table, and especially folks like the chairman that have access to the speaker and the other leaders in Congress.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I hate to think what it would be like, Chip, if we didn't have Congressman Peterson in there speaking with the chairman of Pelosi. Yeah, that would just be unconscionable to think what the alternatives might have been.
We need people and representatives like Peterson, in my opinion, to someone from the speaker's party that is not afraid to go and speak their voice. And Kevin, Peterson does that, doesn't he?
He does do that. You know, from the very first when he had Nancy Pelosi at Farm Fest and helping her to understand agriculture, the importance of animal agriculture, value added, renewable fuels. And we've appreciated that relationship, but sometimes everybody needs to be reminded how important not only agriculture is, but the rural part of this country.
Yeah, yeah, that is spot on, spot on. So late last week, we got the details of CFAP 2 coming out. Sign up started this week, Gene. Have you got Millard Farms signed up?
Not yet. My son is a designated appointed person as head of our family farm operation to deal with issues at the FSA office. And frankly, he's been terribly busy getting corn into a bin trying to combine. So priorities got to be first, and I suppose it'll eventually happen. But the first round, we had a little delay because we added some additional rented land, and that had to get approved for the yields and all that. But it eventually, got processed. We've got a tremendously good FSA office here in our area.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that'll say that and defend their FSA office, Gene. And that relationship and the respect for the people that are in that office, you got to have it because it's an awfully demanding job. What about you, Kevin? You get signed up yet?
I have not signed up. The sun's been out every day far, and just like Gene mentioned, we've got other things on the mind right now, but we've got a great FSA staff in Minnesota as well, but I'm afraid that first rainy day, it could get real ugly with a lot of people wanting to do it when they're not in the field.
That's right. Well, here, there's good news here in this tweet that we got yesterday from @Michael_Bergen. He says, enrolled this morning in CFAP 2, easiest program with USDA that I've ever signed up for. Acres were pulled from FSA and APH yields were pulled by FSA from RMA. CFAP 2 form was sent by email with e-sign. Very simple. #AgriTalk. So there you go, guys. Get it done in a hurry. Thank you so much to Michael for that report. We'll be back with Farmer Forum here in a moment.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
And a big thank you to America's Conservation Ag Movement for sponsoring the Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk. We're talking today with Kevin Papp from Minnesota, Gene Millard from Missouri. Gene, probably should have mentioned this right off in the first segment with you. Farm Broadcasting lost a legend here very recently, didn't we?
Absolute legend. Yeah, our friend Evan Slack, Evan Slack Network, based in Denver, Colorado in recent years, was absolutely the most well-known farm broadcast and loyal enthusiast for ranching in the West. He passed away this past week after a pretty lengthy illness at his place down in Arizona. But, you know, Evan was one of those guys that had a smile on his face. He knew everybody, and everybody knew Evan. If you want to have an experience, go to the National Western Stock Show in Denver and walk the alleyways with Evan. Yeah. You'll like to never get to the other end because everybody wants to talk and talk. You know, that's just the kind of a guy he was.
Yeah.
And I flew many a flight in his Mooney, and we had some interesting occasions flying in that little single-engine bugger from coast to coast, but it was always an enjoyable event. We had great friendship, and we lost a true wheel supporter for farm broadcasting and the agriculture community, particularly the Mountain West. Even though he's a Missouri native, he adapted himself to the Rocky Mountains pretty quickly.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did. You know, and Orion says he's going to retire. Do you believe him?
I heard that this morning, that Orion's going to retire. Now, see, Orion and Evan came into the National Association of Farm Broadcasting at the same time.
Really?
And they were about a few years ahead of me. So, there's two humongous legends that have established themselves as a voice for agriculture. And with Orion, that voice that you'll never believe, it came from God, in Chicago on WGN forever and ever.
Yep.
And, you know, he really represented agriculture to that urban community.
You know, we were talking about the disconnect between urban and rural. Orion was that connection for the Chicago area and rural Illinois for decades.
Forever and ever. I mean,
yeah.
For 60 years, he's been the voice of Illinois agriculture and agriculture for the country. And well-respected and known, of course, when Jack Block was Secretary of Agriculture from Illinois. I mean, he had a direct pipeline into D.C. and has always had a relationship with every congressional leader and administration, you know, over these many, many decades.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Kevin, the conversation with Congressman Peterson, did indemnity payments for hog producers that had to euthanize some hogs, did that come up?
Absolutely. You know, you can't be from Minnesota, number two state in hog production, and not understand that the hard times in agriculture, especially with some of the issues we had with the plant. So talked a lot about that, talked about the importance of just working together to get things done.
Yeah. Now, those payments for the hog producers, that's not going to come from the CCC. It's going to have to come from the next coronavirus aid package, stimulus package, right?
Yeah, I believe so. You know, the devil's always in the details. We've got to move through. We'll have the opportunity to have a conversation with the secretary tomorrow, and I'm sure that's one of the questions Minnesota Farm Bureau members will be asking.
Okay. Yeah. Well, as long as we're going down that path, let's find out about some aid for ethanol producers too, huh?
Absolutely. A lot of ethanol plants, a lot of farmer-owned plants in Minnesota. And I know one question will be talking about the RFS and, you know, the gallons that farmers built plants on, we invested in. I'm sure that will come up as well.
Yeah, certainly will. Certainly will. Gene, what about down in Missouri? What's the priorities down there when you think about the next round of coronavirus aid?
Really concerned, Chip, that we not overdo the scenario here because it is becoming a pretty big number in the millions and billions. Of course, in D.C., what's a trillion, more or less, you know? But I am a little bit concerned that we can overdo this thing and put ourselves in a little bit of a jeopardy when it comes to the next round of farm bill negotiation, because we try to get away from these ad hoc payments with a more sustainable program, but I'm not sure that's all worked out all that well.
Yeah. Boy, Kevin, when you look at some of these ad hoc programs that are out there, the one that, you know, crop insurance is always that item in the farm bill that seems to be, I don't want to call it low-hanging fruit, but it's always targeted as a potential spending cut.
Always targeted and so essential. You know, we need those risk management tools. And I agree with Gene. I think that as we're having all these conversations, we haven't thought through what today's actions mean for the next farm bill and some of those relationships and thought process. And it's not going to be a fun time writing that next farm bill if we need some of those tools and don't have the money to provide them.
Yep. Yeah, Gene, boy, you've covered many a farm bill. The next one is probably going to be the most contentious.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very challenging with a change administration especially.
Yeah.
It will be a very challenging scenario. And unless there's something changes in the House leadership, I think it's just going to be a real uphill battle.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Chip.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Gene, thanks for making time for us this morning. Thank you. It was so good to talk with you again.
Thank you, Chip. You know, enjoyed it very much.
Very good. Very good. That's Gene Millard from Missouri. Kevin, it's always fun to talk with you too, my friend. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Everybody be safe out there. Let's think farm safety every day of harvest.
Good, good, good. Final comment right there, Kevin. Thank you so much. Kevin Papp, President, Minnesota Farm Bureau. Okay, you guys, listen, you got to come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Brian Doherty from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. And tomorrow morning, we've got an interesting conversation on the next generation of fertilizer. We've got that for you tomorrow on AgriTalk.